Likute Siches Chelek Yud, Volume 10, Parshas Noach, the second Sicha, Noach Beis. Regarding what it says in our Parsha, when Noach took the animals into the Teva, into the ark that he built to protect from the flood, it says that he took from the Toher animals, the pure animals, those that are will later be specified as being kosher animals, umin abehema, and from the animals, asher einena tohera, which are not pure. So our sages tell us in the Gemara, psachim, this teaches us that a person should not say from his mouth something offensive. In other words, it should use clean and positive language. For we see that the Torah used extra words, used convoluted language. It spoke with 8 extra letters, and it didn't say something that was offensive. Because it said from, in other words, the Pasuk says, from the pure animals and from those animals that are not pure. And in the in the Hebrew, there's a word for impure. In English, the word is pure and impure. In Hebrew, there's a word tahir, and there's a word tameh, which is a special word for impurity. So therefore, as Rashi points out there, the three words, asher einena tahira, which are not pure, contain 13 letters. Where it could have just said the animal, not that asher einana tahira, but one word, hatmeya, the impure. It only has 5 letters. So there's 13 letters instead of 5 letters, all in order to say, to project, to portray, to enunciate this concept of impurity rather than using the more, so to speak, offensive word. Tameh, which has a harsh connotation, it uses the softer, more polite, more clean word, the animals that were not tahir. This teaches us that a person should always seek to speak in clean language, lashon nekiya.
Okay.
Similarly, says the Rebbe, we have this lesson from the description of the way the animals, what kind of animals were brought into the tevas of Noach. We also have this concept and teaching in the end of the parsha. The end of the parsha has a story where Noach had drunk, and he was lying in his nakedness in the tent. And it says that Yef Shem and Yefes, the two sons of Noach, they were cautious, and they were extremely cautious not to see the uncoveredness of their father. They walked in backwards, and their faces were kept backwards, and they didn't see the erva, they didn't see the uncoveredness, the nakedness of their father. This is what the Torah tells us. And then the Torah goes on to tell us, because they were careful in their seeing, in the way they looked, or didn't in this case, look and see their father, they were blessed with great blessings. And for this we can understand the greatness of what they had done. It says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem. Shem is blessed. Blessed Hashem, the God of Shem. Of Shem, the son of Noach. V'hi Knan, Knan, who's a son of Chom, the third son of Noach. Knan being his son, was Chul Goymer. I mean, the Pasuk says he will be a slave. And then the virtue of Yefes is rewarded. Yaftel Kim the Yefes. Hashem will do good to Yefes, will bring a grace upon Yefes. V'yishka in Ba'al Shem, and he will dwell in the tents of Shem. In other words, those two brothers, Shem and Yefes, who don't look at the uncoveredness of their father, are blessed with great blessings. And Kenan, his son, they're omitted from the blessings, and even worse. So again, we have the two things, the same concept. The Torah expresses impurity in a longer language in order to say it in a more positive tone, not in an offensive tone. Teaches us to look for good language, always try and speak good language. Also, we're told that the way that the sons of Noach looked or didn't look or see their father was a cause of blessing, or the opposite. It teaches us we have to look and always see good things, or look at things in a good light. But we have to understand, chapter 2, we have to understand, says the Rebbe in this story, after it says, there's a nuance in the language here. It says that they walked in, their faces were backwards. That's what the Pasuk says. Pinehem achoranit, their faces were backwards. So obviously, if their faces were backwards, they walked in, backed in, and they didn't look at their father's nakedness. So obviously, they didn't see it. But then the Pasuk says they walked in backwards, and then it adds, and they didn't see their father's uncoveredness. Again, adding that they didn't see it. Well, if they walked in backwards, we understand. Technically, if you walk in backwards, you don't see what's in back of you. I can't resist this little quip. These days we have, when we back up in our car, we have this camera. We have an eye in the back of our head, so to speak. But of course, in those days, they weren't wearing a camera in the back of their head. They walked in backwards, they didn't see. So why does the Pasuk add that? So obviously there's something being a chidush. There's a new concept being introduced here, and something virtuous, additionally virtuous about Shem and the Ephes, in the fact that they walked in backwards, which technically means they didn't see, and then the Pasuk adds, and they didn't see the uncoveredness of their father. There's something being added there with that extra emphasis that they didn't see the uncoveredness of their father. So we'll understand all this based on a teaching of the Baal Shem Tov, which goes as follows. When a person sees negative in his fellow, this is a proof that similar to this negativity is to be found in him himself. And it's just like a person who looks in the mirror. If his face is clean, he doesn't see in the mirror anything wrong. If, however, he sees negativity or something dirty in the mirror, it's a sign that his face is dirty. Right? You have to understand. Why is it so imperative to say that? Why is it imperative to say that when you see something negative in somebody else, it's like a reflection of yourself, and you're really seeing a vision of what's going on in the person who's seeing the negativity? Why can't it be that you see somebody else's negativity and the other guy is really negative and you don't have it at all? So the explanation is, every event in the world is by divine providence. And similarly, this event, what does an event mean? Event doesn't have to mean a big headline news. An event means anything that goes on in your experiential life. Which means also that anything that you hear or see, and the fact that you heard or saw it, is by divine providence. So therefore, also this event that you've seen something take place, and you've seen it in a negative light, you've seen the negativity in it, this is not by chance. You saw something, somebody do something negative, there's no chance here. But it's something that was coordinated and orchestrated from above. It's Hashgacha Pratis. It's divine providence. Everything divine providence. And since Hashem doesn't create something in this world for nothing, so we can't say that Hashem just, well, how should I say, coincidence. I just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time to see somebody doing something negative. No. There must be a teaching, and there must be something that is being told to the person who sees it. What is that teaching? That negativity should be fixed. That negativity, says the Baal Shem Tov, is by me too. And if I saw it, I need to fix it. Why does it have to come that way? If Hashem wants to give me a message that I have something that's imperfect, and he wants me to fix it, why does he have to send it? I see something bad in somebody else. So we know that there's a human condition that exists with each and every one of us, which is called partiality, which is called we are subjective. We're all partial to ourselves. We're subjective about ourselves. And a person has self-love, and therefore on all his imperfections, the self-love covers over and doesn't allow a person to see and to perceive his own inadequacies. There's a halacha in the laws of negoim, laws of skin afflictions, which we know that they have to be checked by a kohen. But it has to be somebody else. Ein adam roya nigay atzmi. There's a halacha. A person is halachically not allowed to check out his own skin afflictions to decide about them, whether they are pure or impure. But to take that to a service of Hashem note, it's that not just the halachically a person is not allowed to decide about his own nigoy, about his own skin afflictions. We can read it as actually a statement of fact. A person does not see his own afflictions. That's the nature of our humanness. We love ourselves, and therefore we overlook our own faults. We excuse them. We don't even see them. When we do see them, we understand the mitigating factors which caused us to do them, and therefore we don't hold ourselves accountable because of them. The only thing is when we see them in somebody else, that opportunity allows us to see, oh wow, this is really not proper behavior. We're able to see the faults, right? We're able to see the depravity or the inappropriateness of this kind of behavior because we're seeing it in somebody else, and we do see it there. The love of somebody else doesn't cover it up. So when you realize that you've seen something negative, and then you meditate and you realize, one second, am I free of this? And you realize that no, what you're seeing is really only a reflection of what you really know that deep down is to be found by you, just however you would never have seen it in yourself because of your self-love. I must add here that this doesn't mean that if you saw someone stealing, that you're a robber. It means, though, that there is... What it can mean, though, is that there's an aspect of theft that you need to be made aware of that could exist in you. Theft could be, for example, gnevas das. Gnevas das means making an impression that you are something that you're not. You're stealing, so to speak. You're being dishonest in the terms of the impression you're making. Or something like that, which is much more subtle. You're not going and holding up a bank. So, just wanted to clarify that about the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov. It doesn't mean that you've done that actual blatant negativity. But there's an aspect of the negativity, teaches the Baal Shem Tov, which you're seeing in somebody else to make you aware of it, that it needs fixing in yourself. And the Rebbe quotes in a footnote and a fascinating concept that is, we really judge ourselves when we have to face our day of judgment. Our day of judgment, or every night when we judge ourselves, or whatever it is. But the way Hashem judges us is the way we've judged others. What does that mean? We've seen others do certain things and pass judgments. Oh, that's horrible. This this is unacceptable. And now Hashem says, one second. When we're looking at you, when we're scrutinizing you, this behavior, you've already said it's inappropriate. You've already seen it by somebody else and said it's inappropriate. So there's the way we look at others is the way we're held accountable as well. Here, the Baal Shem, it's just a similar concept. It says, al derech. But what we're saying here is that what you see in somebody else, the purpose and function of you seeing something negative in something else is to fix yourself, because you wouldn't see it in yourself. So the only way to do it is to show it to you in somebody else. One second. But that sounds like that other person is in service of you. The only reason that that person's negativity is being shown to you is in order you should fix yourself. One second. Can't we just say that really, the purpose for you seeing the somebody else's negativity is to help him? There's a mitzvah in the Torah, hecheyach techiyach. We have to tell off somebody else if we see negativity in them. Because we have a responsibility, even to somebody else, the Torah says, even 100 times we have to tell the person off. Try and get them on the right path. Again, parenthetically, I'll just mention here that you have to do this. You have to know that that what you're telling him is going to help get him to the right path. Obviously, this requires thought, this requires subtlety, this requires... And when in doubt, consult with your spiritual guide to figure out if what you're going to tell somebody, to tell him off, is actually going to exacerbate it or it's going to achieve something. But that's parenthetical. But we have an obligation to try and help out those around us and try and put them on the right path as well. So why does it have to be that if I saw something negative in something else, it's to fix me? Maybe it's to fix him. Right? Another question is, and even more so, now we're going to ask a deeply philosophical question. And that is, we know that the Bnei Yisrael, the Jewish people's function in the world is that they are the intention. Hashem, Atzmus, Ein Sof, God in all his essence has a desire to have a dwelling place down here and below in the world, right? So that means that Hashem's intention is in the Jewish people. That is the reason for the Torah being given. That's actually the reason for all the highest levels of revelation that we talk about emanating from Hashem, and the highest, highest worlds, the supernal worlds we can that dazzle us, we can't touch, we can't even believe. Really, they're all subservient in a way. In other words, they're all because there should be a lower world with a Jewish people to do the Torah. So the purpose of Hashem, the intention of Hashem, is the Jewish people doing the Torah in this lower world. The Bnei Yisrael, they are the reason for creation. But that doesn't just apply to the collective Bnei Yisrael. There's also a centrality of purpose within each and every Jew. He is the reason. Bishvili nivra elam. Every Jew has to say, the world was created for me. I am the reason for creation, for me to do Torah and mitzvahs. Which means I'm not just a vehicle for somebody else to be able to fulfill. I'm just an extra, kind of the scenery. No, other parts of creation, they're the scenery. In other words, there has to be a world. So Hashem creates a world with everything in it, so that the Jew, the Israel, should fulfill the Torah. But the Jewish people, they are their reason. They're the lead actor. And every Jew individually is also a lead actor. So therefore the question is, how can it be that what we're saying, if I see something negative in something else, in somebody else, that whole purpose is for me, but he can't be just a purpose for me. How does that work? And we understand also, it can't be that I'm being shown somebody else's negativity only for my benefit and not for his benefit. It's obviously also for his benefit. What would be his benefit that I see his negativity, that I should be able to explain to him or help him, elevate him? And since that's the case, so we have to say that there is, in other words, the Baal Shem Tov's Vart, says the Rebbe, what the Baal Shem Tov is saying does not preclude or take away from the very basic, essential concept that there is centrality in each and every Jew in his service to Hashem. Therefore, if I'm seeing the negativity in somebody else, there needs to be something for that person there as well. It's not just for me. So the Baal Shem Tov is saying, in addition to that, what I'm seeing in that person is not just for him, but it's for me too. Of course it's for him as well. But there should be something, they should be able to help him, should be able to fix him, something should happen. Because it can't be that another Jew is just here to serve, so to speak, or to be a vehicle, or to be a conduit for me to be able to be rectified. But the fact that we say that additionally to the very intention, that when I see something negative in somebody else, the default is that it's in order to fix the person. Comes the Baal Shem Tov and says, that's not enough. No, it's also, I wouldn't have been shown it just for that. That's what the Baal Shem Tov seems to be saying. I'm being shown it because it's showing something in me. Why do we have to say this? Asked the Rebbe. If we understand that the basic, philosophically and conceptually, it has to be that there's something in that particular Jew that is gained by me seeing, right? He can't just be to fulfill a betterment for me. So if that's the case, if there's something going on there for him that I have to see, why do we need to come and say that there's, if I saw it, it means it's a lesson for me? Why do we have to add that? So we're gonna explain this. To understand this, first we want to understand just I'll share with you a footnote to grab my attention. There seems to be a concept that in the Yisachar and Zvulun relationship, when we have the people that support Torah scholars, so you have the one that studies, the one that supports. The Medrash says that the Jewish people is like a grapevine. So you have the grapes and you have the leaves. It says the leaves protect the grapes. And it says there that what? That the leaves are those that are not Torah schooled, not Torah knowledgeable, and they're more in the field of support. And we say, well, their greatness is, if without their support, just like without the leaves, the grapes wouldn't be protected. Without their support, the Torah knowledge in the grapes and those scholars wouldn't be protected. So it seems to be that the supporters are, so to speak, serving the learners. So the Rebbe says, it's not so. It's not that they just, their function is to be, is for something else, for the learners. But through the fact that they support and they protect the Torah learners, they themselves actually, that is their function in and of themselves. They become part of the Torah learners because the Torah learning couldn't happen without it. So it's not that they're there on behalf of something else. It's not just that leads them to allow something and they're enablers. No, they actually become part of that whole dynamic of Torah study. It has to be for them as well. Okay. So now, in order to understand this, let's speak about a little bit of analysis of the Gemara in Pesachim, where this whole concept comes from about not saying something offensive. The Gemara continues there and it says like this. Person shouldn't say something offensive. As it says, from the animal that is not pure, rather than saying the word tummy. Continuation to that, the Gemara introduces another thing and says, we also see that a person should speak in clean language from the Pacta when it comes to the laws of Zav. So the laws of Zav, which are emissions that come out, it can be either from a man or a woman. So in the various nuances of the Tumah, of the impurity, so we speak about what becomes impure. And one of the things that becomes impure is when a person in that impure state has sat on either a seat or has ridden, let's say, on a horse or a donkey or whatever. So when the Pasuk speaks about the male Zav, it speaks about the concept, what happens if he had, the thing he had ridden on. When it speaks about a woman, it says only, it speaks about the thing she has sat on. And the reason for this distinction, that by a man would say the language that he had ridden on, by a woman it only says that she had sat on, is because it's not appropriate to speak about riding. The activity of riding requires you can't sit on with both legs together. The activity of riding requires swinging your leg over and sitting on the thing you're riding, and that's inappropriate to talk about, to refer to, when we're describing a zava, when we're describing the feminine person who's not pure. So about this, the Gemara asks, well, we find certain places where the language of riding is used, even by a woman. And then the Gemara answers why that still doesn't take away, detract from the lesson we've learned that we should speak in proper, clean, and polite language. But then the Gemara asks a strong question. The Gemara then says, one second, does it never say the word tameh in the Torah? Now, this is an interesting question. The word tameh, meaning impure. Again, the Hebrew word that says impure in one word. It's full of, the Torah is full of it. More than 100 times in the Torah. So what were we thinking? What does the Gemara just come up as? Oh, does it never say tameh in the Torah? It's like it's introducing a new question that's, one second, I've uncovered this big discovery. It says tameh in the Torah. Hello. It says so many times in the Torah. So, if you wanted to ask a question about speaking clean language, so it said, well, we do find that it says sometimes by a woman, the Lashon, the expression of riding. Hello, it just says that three times. If you want to knock a challenge to this premise that a person should always speak in clean language based on the Torah, just right away you should roll in with a boom, doesn't it? It says Tommy in the Torah, and not ask it in that form. Doesn't it ever say Tommy in the Torah? Hello. Everybody knows it says Tommy more than 100 times. It should just say, one second, but it says Tommy in the Torah. So it, in other words, the question seems to be more a more subtle question, a more nuanced question, not just it says Tommy in the Torah. No, doesn't it ever? It seems like there's some context we need to have here. So it explains it ever like this. When it comes to saying a halacha, we have to have unambiguity. We have to be unambiguous. In other words, we have to be clear. When it comes to say a halacha in the Torah, we have to use the most clear expression. Even if it's offensive language, even if it's to say tummy, it's impure. Because you got to get the halacha across in the most clear and precise and understandable manner. This is why we'll understand. Yes, the Torah is full of saying the word tummy, because where it says tummy, it's telling us, not because it's trying to use a shorter language. We just said that a shorter language is no reason to say a word that's less positive. Because we say, we'd even say eight extra letters to say it's not pure, rather than saying impure, right? But that's not the point. It said tameh so many places just because it's the proper thing when you teach a halacha to be concise, to be clear, to be unambiguous. When it comes, so what did we learn about Noach? Oh, 1 second, Noach is not teaching a law. It's not laying down the fact. It's not laying down the deciding halacha. It's telling us a story. When it comes to the story, when you're relating something about this, the pasuk says that, oh, the Torah can convolute and say extra letters in order to teach us speak longer if you have to, even though the Torah is concise, but in speak longer to get the positive language, not to say something that's offensive. Okay. And in this case, when it comes to the stories, it says the way the Marsha understands the Gemara, that a long language, a long and clean language, is there in storytelling in the Torah, no less than a short and concise, offensive, for offensive, I don't like the word offensive, a maguna, something, a language that's denigrating or whatever, a little negative. Why? Because when it comes to there's a virtue, an advantage of speaking longer, clean language, which is equal to speaking shorter, saving on words, but saying it in a way that's not so subtle, not so soft. However, when it comes to most of the Torah where we're talking about this is kosher, this is not kosher, this is tummy, this is not tummy, you got to say it clearly in a lashon tzar, in a very concise, unambiguous form. Okay. Therefore, we'll understand that even though it says a lot of places tummy in the Torah, that's not the source of question, that we can question this concept of speaking in a longer language and speak clean. Doesn't it say tummy in the Torah? We understand it has to say tummy whenever it's needed, teaching halacha. So what is the Gemara then? So what is the question of the Gemara? That doesn't it say tummy in the Torah? The Gemara asked that. We just said that it says tummy because it has to speak clearly. The Gemara is asking, for those, don't we find the word tummy anywhere where we're just talking about a story? Is it true that even when it's not halacha, where obviously there we have to say tummy, isn't it so that in the Torah it never says tummy, even when it's talking, relating something or telling a story or teaching something that's not directly necessary to say it in a concise, halachic, decisive manner? That's the question. And for that, there's only a few places. It's not more than 100 times. For that, we would have to nitpick. For that, we would have to be fine-tuned and see where we could, but there are some places, the Gemara is saying, doesn't it, in other words, does it never say tummy, even when it's talking about a story? Okay. So here we have a clarity in the Gemara. And the clarity in the Gemara is pretty much, Torah teaches us to speak in a concise manner. I'm sorry, the Torah teaches us that rather than speaking in a concise manner, convolute in order to speak in a non-offensive manner, to speak in a nice, clean language. Taking into account, the Gemara doesn't tell us this, but the Rebbe says this is clear in the Gemara, that the Gemara is within the context that obviously if you're teaching a halacha, We know elsewhere that when you teach halacha, you have to say it clearly. So that's for sure. The teaching here about speaking clean is being taught from when we tell a story, when it's something that's not related to an actual movement and next action, which is halachic. Where there you do have to say. Now comes the Rebbe and says, okay, so we have the parameters, right? Speak even longer, but speak clean. If it's something that's a description, obviously, you have to speak to the point if you're paskin halacha. Say what you got to say. He says the Rebbe in chapter 7 here, like this. When you have to say a halacha, you have to say it clearly. However, when the discussion about the halacha, when the wording that you're speaking, pure or impure, is not an actual discussion of halacha, it's not deciding the halacha, rather, it's the background. It's the background of the halacha. There, you should still speak in a clean way. How do we see this? When the Torah says, when a person is in battle, the Torah says, when somebody was in the camp, and he had an experience at night, that was not pure. Didn't say tome. It says lo yihi yator, is not pure. Then he has to leave the camp, and the Torah tells us how to purify himself. Aren't we teaching a halacha? So why does the Torah speak in a longer language, to speak in a positive tone? Isn't it a halacha? Should just said if a person had a tome experience. So the Rebbe says, because this is the description of what happened to the person is not to say whether he's pure or impure. It's in order to tell us that he has to leave the camp. That is the decisive aspect here. So therefore, because the first aspect is just describing the scenario, in describing the scenario, the pasuk did convolute and add extra language in order to speak in a positive language. You get it? If it's not related to the actual instruction, what needs to be done, the instruction has to be concise. Tommy, here it's saying the setup, the scenario, the scenery. The scenery is if a person had an experience that was not tahor. Okay, that's just describing the scenario. That's painting the picture. Now comes the halachic aspect that says he has to leave the camp. Oh, that has to be said clearly, but not the description, not the scenery. So now let's take this also to vision. Okay, when a person hears or sees about something inappropriate about a fellow Jew, so he has to see the deciding action, the halacha lamaisa. What's the actionability? What's actionable here? In other words, what do I have to do to fix it? I have to tell the person off. I have to try and help the person get to a better place. That's why I saw it. That's the actionable item when you see something wrong in somebody else. Is the first thing is, how am I gonna help him get out of that? Right? Bring him to a better place. That has to be the main thing you think about, the main thing you see when you see a negativity in somebody else. However, if when you heard something negative about somebody else, what do you see? What you saw in your mind's eye is not what you have to do to fix up. But you see, you notice and see the negativity in that person. Or at least that's what's uppermost in your mind. You know, it's not what I have to do to fix him, but I see that negativity in the person. This is a proof, says the Baal Shem Tov, that my own face is dirty. That seeing the negativity in somebody else is seeing the negativity in myself. In other words, because everything that Hashem created is not for naught. Everything Hashem created, every detail that Hashem created is for a purpose. So even the detail, the nuance of what I saw, not what happened, but what did I see from what happened? What was my take on it? What was my experience of what happened? So the detail and nuance of the experience of what I saw in that happening is also from heaven. In other words, also for a purpose, not just tamaze. The fact that they showed me from above that providentially, Ashkacha Pratis, I saw the negativity, something that needs to be fixed in my friend. Okay, there's one lesson there. I have to help fix the person, right? But the fact that I also saw a negativity, I saw it in a negative light. I didn't just see it as something that needs to be fixed. Okay, on my to-do list, let me speak to that person about being more honest. But I saw in that person, such dishonesty I see in that person. Ooh, if I saw the bad, this is an indication that I'm seeing bad because it needs to tell me something. So of course, he's not just a function for me. I see something bad in him, it's because I need to help him. He's the center of his universe, of God's universe. But then, one second, I could have just seen it and thought, I gotta tell the guy he's a little bit misguided. I have to have just pointed out, okay, but nothing bad, you know, nothing bad, nothing good. Just a task for me to do to help this person in serving Hashem. When I see that, one second, why am I seeing the bad? Fact that I saw it in that bad light, that means I have to fix myself. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been emphasized to me that I should see this negativity. If I would be a tzaddik about that, the Rebbe injects here in the footnote that the Baal Shem Tov's teaching, as taught by the Ma'ir Einayim, by the Chernobyl tzaddik, the Matl Chernobyl, he says if you're a pure tzaddik, you wouldn't see any bad. Says the Rebbe, I mean, based on the Tanya, it's very difficult to be a pure tzaddik. The Rebbe says, but if you would be a tzaddik in that aspect, if you didn't have any dishonesty in you, sometimes you could have a person who's not a total tzaddik, but he's a very honest person. If you were truly honest, you wouldn't even notice it as, you wouldn't notice that dishonesty. Hashem wouldn't give you the vision of that dishonesty as with a feeling of negativity. You would feel, oh, I have to try and educate this person. The fact that you see it as a negative means there's something lingering in you, and Hashem is showing that to you by this experience. So this experience has two things. You have to fix him, and you also have to, because you see the negativity, which didn't have to be, that part didn't have to be. Hashem could have just shown you, for that person's benefit, how to fix that person. But the fact that Hashem allowed you, or showed you, or gave you to see the negativity, it's because He wants to show you about yourself. You also have that. You got to fix it too. Now we'll understand what in the story of the sons of Noach, what's added here. It says that they didn't see the uncoveredness of their father, even though, I mean, we understand they walked in backwards. Oh, it's emphasizing not just that they didn't physically see the uncoveredness of their father because they technically walked in backwards. They don't have eyes in the back of their head. But more than that, they didn't see, they didn't feel, they didn't perceive this nakedness, this uncoveredness, and detrimental aspect in their father. What they were focused on is what needs to be done. What do we need to do to fix right now to help our father? They didn't see the negativity of their father. They didn't see the uncoveredness of their father. And this we will understand why these two brothers, Shem and Yefes, who walked in a way that they didn't focus or see or notice the negativity of their father in that scenario. What's the difference with Cham? It says, Vayar Cham. Cham saw. Cham did see the nakedness of his father. What the third brother, what grabbed him was not what needed to be done. But he saw the negativity. Well, where does that come from? It says that it actually comes from their spiritual source. Everything has a Kabbalistic corresponding concept. The sons of Noach represent the three different sources of light as they come down from above. The source of Cham, we say, Cham comes from Gevura. Cham comes from the heat. Cham is heat. Chaim comes from the heat of the left side. And just by the way here, we should say that there's two ways of learning the story of Cham. What did Cham do? The way we're talking now is not the way Rashi. Rashi said Cham did something very reprehensible to his father. He was engaged in an illicit act with his father, and that's not a subtle thing. That's a blatant bad. What we're going to talk about here is portraying Cham the way that Radak, one of the other commentaries, learns the sin of Cham, which was that he saw his father in a negative way, and he told his brother, oh, did you see what father did? But he hadn't actually done anything blatantly wrong. So now we're talking about, so it's a subtle negativity. Lesson that Rebbe is learning is going along with the fact that Cham was doing something subtly wrong. The fact that he saw his father's lacking, this was the problem. Where does it come from? He comes from a place which is Chaim. He comes from heat, the way he emanates from above, from the left side. That heat, even though heat can be good, but what he saw was that Noach's drunkenness, right? Where does that come from? It also comes from heat. So what he needed to be shown, again, you understand, it came from being heated up, from smell, came from the drinking and the drunkenness, and that led to something negative. Cham saw that negativity, and really, we're saying he was telling that he had something of that nature by himself, even though it was more subtle by him. He hadn't done anything of the nature of Noach. He hadn't fallen into that shameful state. But still, subtly, he also comes from that same place, and it awakened. It had to show him the purpose was, and what he saw was his father's uncoveredness, because he had that too in him. And it needed, what he was seeing was his own shortcoming. Again, Shem and Yefes, they come from the Kava Yamin, from the right side. and therefore, or and from the middle side, the middle, so there's right, left, middle, and from right and middle, which is positive. So by them, they didn't see the bad. That bad wasn't to be found by them. It was totally negated from them. Therefore, they didn't see. They walked in backwards, and they also didn't perceive this, in this scenario, they didn't perceive the negativity. Because by them, it wasn't even in a subtle way, this negativity. And therefore, because they were totally clean of it, so they didn't see it in the other person. All they saw is what they have to do. Okay, what they have to do, that's... You saw it, means Hashem wants you to do something about it. They came and fixed the situation. They walked in backwards, and they didn't dwell on... Now, here's the lesson for us. Whoa, is this a lesson? Wow. The lesson for us is, when a person hears or sees something negative about somebody else, besides for the fact that you're not allowed to go and tell it to others, not like Chum did, he went and told it to his brothers outside. It wasn't enough that he saw it. He went and even projected and passed it on. He went to tell his two brothers outside. More than that, person, we shouldn't even think in our mind negativity about somebody else. You have to think, what can I do about it? How can I elevate him? How can I tell him off? How can I guide him in the proper way? And how can I help fix him? At the same time, try in every way possible to look, levakesh esa, the Rebbe says, to search for counsel and all kinds of ishtadlus, try in every which way possible not to see the negativity of your friend, even when you're dealing with him, trying to fix him, not to see it in the negative light. This is what something we have to try. Now here I'd like to, I'll add this at the end. Let me first complete the sikha here. When we add, this is a footnote. That's why it's not. So I'll just give you the footnote here is to Igeres HaKodesh, to the letters in Tanya of the Alter Rebbe, the Holy Letters, chapter 22. But I'll give it to you just in a way that you may make a deeper impression on you. I heard recently an interview of Rabbi Shmuel Lu, Shliach in London, and he was saying something over from Reb Mendel Futterfass, that famed Chassid, who had survived Siberian gulags for 25 years or so, whatever. So he said like this. He says, you know, the world, in our generation, the world is very much focused on talking about, we have to be careful not to speak Lashon Hara, not to speak negative talk. It's a prohibition in the Torah. Not to speak, and it's very, very detailed. We have to really be careful not to say negative things about somebody else. It's called Lashon Hara. So the Mendel says, why don't we talk about it so much in our environment? He says, because the Alter Rebbe wants much more. Alter Rebbe in chapter 22, here the Rebbe quotes it here in the Sikha, in the footnote. Alter Rebbe says, this is why I beg of you, I ask you, my beloved ones, my friends, please try with all your heart and soul to plant firmly the love of your friend in your heart. And a person should not see negativity of his friend, and you shouldn't think about it in your heart, as it says in the verse, and it should never even come on your heart ever, and if it does come, you should blow it away, banish it from your heart, just like smoke gets blown away totally. And you should treat it just like thinking about idolatry, mamish being idolaters, because Lashon Hara is greater, is corresponding to the three sins of idolatry, adultery, and murder. And if that is said about Lashon Hara, about speaking bad, chulu, how much more so about thought? As already known to every wise person, the greatness and the more the higher level that thought is on speech, for good or, God forbid, for bad. In other words, by letting a negative thought into your mind about your friend, that is the problem. Of course you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara. The Alter Rebbe says, I want you not even to think about it. Same way you don't think about going and serving idols. You don't think about murder. You don't think, God forbid, about doing a sin of adultery. Chas v'shalom. Can't chas v'shalom think negative about somebody else. Says the Rebbe quotes here, this Igeres HaKodesh, that the Alter Rebbe is saying it's even worse in a way, because thought is so much part of you. It's a much closer garment. It is who you are. You know yourself only through your thoughts. So if, God forbid, your thoughts are sullied by thinking negatively about somebody else, it's even worse. So don't even think about somebody else negatively. And this is what we have to try, not to see negative about somebody else, not even think negative about somebody else. When we do this, then we can have the blessings of, we'll be following the path of shame and yefes of this week's parsha, and then we'll be able to be merit to have the promise of the blessing. Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem, Hashem will bless the God of shame. V'ichnan Eved Lamei, and Canaan will be a slave. In other words, we'll be able to be blessed with all the blessing, and Hashem will dwell in the tents of shame. We'll have, what does it mean that Hashem will dwell in our tents? It means that we will be vessels that the Torah should dwell in us. And it fits in, because what's the vessel for Torah? Vessel for Torah is peace. If we're peaceful, and if we don't see negativity about others, we'll be a greater vessel for Torah. Till we'll merit that Hashem will dwell totally in our collective, in Ohal Hashem, which is a reference to the Beis HaMikdash, the third Beis HaMikdash, through Achdus and Av Yisrael, through love and unity of our fellow Jews. So to sum it up, the Baal Shem Tov said, when you see something negative in somebody else, it means it's a sign you have to fix yourself. The Rebbe clarified that this means, besides what it means, that you need to help that person fix them, and that's the reason you were shown it. The fact that you see negative in it is a sign that you have that negativity. So, and then here the Rebbe says that we have to actually, it's not a mitzvah to see negative in somebody else so you should feel bad about yourself and find that negativity. We should constantly get better. We should try and always see others in a positive light, that in a way that we can be helpful to them, but we shouldn't see their negativity. But, you know, we this is something we aim towards. It's something we try. This is the hero. We have to try and do this. Invariably, I would guess, just from personal experience, we do often see the negativity, not just what needs that person needs to be helped with, but the negativity. And therefore, we need to know that that is something we need to fix. So we have something to aim towards and constantly get better at. Don't see the negativity in somebody else, because you're just seeing about yourself. So truthfully, exercise your mind. Not just talk Lashon Hara, to be like Chom Bayage, to tell the brothers about something negative. Not even to think negative about something else. That takes training. You know, today people very often go to trainers and to exercisers to help themselves, do their muscles and so on. With the service of Hashem, it's very similar. It doesn't just come. Don't wake up in the morning and say, "Now I'm just going to see good about others." No. You got to work on it. You got to train yourself. When you catch yourself, say, "Oh, I'm not going there. Let me think about something good. Let me see it in a positive light." And when you do that, you actually become better too. And then you realize, one second, I got to walk the talk. I got to also act in the way that I'm encouraging others to act. All the best. Be well.